Okay, so we're talking about wielding ultimate power and how ultimate power ultimately corrupts.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not gonna even worry about my disclaimer on this one, simply
No,
because,
this is just a conversation.
yeah, this is a conversation. But you know, it's like the Jediism that I'm teaching, that it is about having to go to a place as a last resort, okay, where there's the ultimate consequence. However, there's options to it, and that we don't want to go there because of the damage that can happen, right? But yet,
I've taken a self-defense class,
right.
and in the class they taught us this is the extent you can go to in a street fight if you need to,
Yes.
but these are some things that you can do if it's like you don't want to cause a whole ton of harm to a person and you just want to send a message.
Yeah. And you know,
Or if
and
or just protect yourself in the situation and handle the person to a certain extent, but you're keeping yourself safe, but you don't have to go to an extreme through it if you don't
yeah.
want to.
But how many people actually have experienced to that extreme?
Statistically, you are less likely to be in that kind of situation if you have studied self-defense, because you will hold yourself in ways that would be less likely that someone would attack you based off of what you learn in said class.
Yeah, and but my point with this is that if one has never really truly got into a actual physical altercation, like we're talking, you get into the intimate space and you mean to do harm, okay? You mean to actually stop a person where there is actual harm. Okay, there's really not a lot of people that have actually experienced that unless you've physically A, experienced it and done it, or also those that have trained in that way. Okay, where we're going to go to this point, but however, we're going to stop here. But if you've ever gone to that point, you know the results. Okay. And this is where, yes, knowing one can do that. But the question comes, should you? Okay. Is the question one always has to weigh before taking that step of going, I have this ability and know how, and I will. However, I don't want to. Okay. But yet, that ultimate consequence may be what's necessary or coming very close to it. But
Without
however,
consequences, how do we know to hold ourselves to certain morality and ethics?
yes. And though, yes, Gray Jediism does talk about that. We talk about and know that when it comes to that point, we have to allow ourselves to be open to that. Okay, we know that possibility exists, and we have no. We do not, we have no reservations of about going there because we know we've weighed things out. We've looked at it, but nothing else is working. Nothing else is going to end this. So this is what I must do. But It's not just one of those things that one willingly goes into straight off. Okay. There are positions and steps one must take prior to. Okay. It's not, but if it escalates to that point during, then one has no reservations about going there. And say, for example, you've told people, look, I have worked very hard to not be that person. Okay. But if need be, and I keep getting pushed, I will show you that person. Provided this continues. Well, same thing happens. And they keep bringing up who you were. And there comes a point where you go, you know what? I've tried very hard to not do this. I've tried very hard to avoid this. You've asked, you shall receive. And this is who you do not want to see. And you show them. And then after they see it and you're called names, stuff like that, it's like, you're not a human being. I told you. If you keep pushing and this keeps happening, you will see. And no one's going to enjoy it. I am going to make enemies doing it. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with this consequence. I'm okay with the results. Because you've taken steps to avoid this. You've taken steps and taken measures and weighed out and examined. This is the last thing I want to do. But we are at that point. We're now.
I think this goes back to the topic of environments we were raised in as well.
Yes, yes. And though, yes, the environments we were raised in may be the reason, but it's not the excuse.
It's like, being in a certain environment means, especially if it's chaotic and unpredictable, that you're going to have to be a certain way, or you might be reactive in a certain way in said environment.
Yes.
But when you get outside of that environment and you see things from other perspectives, you realize, okay, maybe I should work on this. Maybe I don't have to be that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe the perspectives from that environment, maybe looking at it from a different perspective from outside of that.
Yes.
Can bring greater insight into what we actually think outside of that.
Yeah, and here's the beauty in this, actually, is that you get to see there is a different way. Okay. You learn the compassion. You learn where grace, you learn where mercy is, okay? And that one may deserve for that consequence to be established, to be issued, okay? But then you go, enough has been done, enough has come to the point of that, though they don't deserve it, I'm not going to. And be merciful on that.
And sometimes we understand better how to maintain ourselves in said chaotic environments once we're removed from it.
Yes.
And we understand an outside perspective of, hey, maybe look at it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And address some things with yourself. And then when you go back into similar environments, you're like, oh, okay, I can look at this from a different perspective. I don't have to agree with everyone. I can actually be an individual in this, and I can decide for myself what I'm going to do here.
Yeah, and this is where, like, okay, I'm going to use this Marvel character, Logan, Wolverine, okay? Of James Howlett, okay? When he is not being bothered, okay, when he's seeking peace, because he is always, his life has always been of violence, okay? And he's very good at it, okay? As he says, what I do ain't nice, but I'm the best there is at it. And he looks to have peace. He looks to seek a different way. But yet, you put him in the position, you have asked for the wrong situation. Because he's going to extend his claws, and it's going to take anything short of a miracle for him to stop. But yet he will, if he sees that I can hold to see. He does have a bit of compassion. He does have a bit of empathy, but it takes a lot for him to see once he's in that mode of, I am getting ready to run you through and I will not feel bad about it. But yet, on the other side of, and it's to the point of that he goes, I did what I had to do. But yet, when he does it, there is a bit of regret in it. There's a bit of remorse. And he says that everything I've done ends up bad. Everybody I've come gotten close to dies. Bad things happen. Okay. But that's how he's grown up. That's his life. That's the life he knows. And he greatly wanted to not be in that life because he's been shown something different that was peaceful, that was teaching, that was productive and mentorship. Okay. He was also very protective of the people he loved and cared about deeply. Okay. And that, but yet it come down to it, he had no gumption about, okay, the ultimate consequence is coming your way. And I'm not going to stop. I'm going to issue it. And you are going to taste it. You're going to see just how good I am. Okay. Now, let's flip that around. Okay. Charles Xavier showed him another way, right? Charles Xavier taught him there are other ways, diplomacy. There are ways to teach through history. There are ways, other means to an end. Okay. And Charles Xavier taught James Howlett that. Because let's face it, James Howlett, when he died, was over 300 years old. That's a long time. But yet, on the other side, he learned a lot of philosophies from a lot of different masters. A lot of different people, mainly in the Asian philosophical aspects of Bushido and other aspects along with other forms of combat. So he wanted to avoid it the way you're in the garden. He liked being in the garden, but was always prepared for war, but enjoyed the peace. And I think many can relate to that, and yet I relate to that as well. Because my own life was very chaotic when I grew up, as I was growing up. And I know that very well. And I've experienced a lot of different ways, and I've had that physical altercations on many levels and on many occasions. And have had to engage in that. But I have found that even though those altercations can be, in a way, fun by, I play airsoft, okay, whenever I get the chance. That's combative. It's fun. Everybody's enjoying it, and nobody gets hurt unless somebody falls or, you know, accidents happen or somebody got too close and fired, right? But yet, when it's all done right, everybody laughs and has good times. And there are mishaps that happen that are funny. Like, for example, somebody gets shot in the butt several times. Painful? Yes. But people are laughing, no harm done. Or people get shot in the genital area. That's painful too. But yet people laugh. People go, are you okay? You're like, yeah, I'm good. And everybody's still cracking up, but everybody knows that accidents can happen. Okay, things do happen. So I've learned that even though in a chaotic environment that is intense, that yet there are things that you can still get from it that still have positive outcomes, that still have positivity, that everybody is okay.
Even in chaotic environments, there's still things that we learn from them.
Yes. Yes.
There are values that we take away. And even in adaptation to said chaotic environments, there are certain adaptations that we'll do to tolerate it more, to be able to address it more. But in that, there's also when you get out of those environments and you find that there is this big old world that can think differently in many ways, you can realize I can look at this from a different perspective.
I don't
have to be completely like resentful and all this stuff towards these aspects of how I was raised or the environment that I was in.
Yes.
I don't have to agree. I can look at it from a different perspective. And maybe that can bring me more understanding towards the thinking behind what that was trying to show me.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, here's a good example, I think, with the airsoft deal. Okay. That even though being aggressive, and I'm going to use airsoft as a great example here because it is a very positive activity to do. It brings a lot of people together. Families can do it. Father, sons, family-oriented fun, right? And you meet a lot of good people in it. You meet some good teachers, and you meet some not so good players. But there's also teaching moments in it and learning times where somebody who's been in it for a while can show a new player what to look out for and how to be good, better, and to reduce, okay, to reduce your chances of getting hit and maybe score more, okay? But yet, in that, there is aggressiveness and assertiveness in it, and an intensity where people that have grown up in environments that are intense, that are chaotic, those environments, in a way, may be more befitting to them because they understand and it's familiar to them. So they might thrive very well and seek that out, you know, and be very at home and happy doing it and feel a great sense of relief. And they have exhausted those emotions, that thought, that energy that was stirred up during it to, I have to do this, or I'm getting ready to this. But yet, you put this replica in their hands that looks very real, and they are quite at home. And one thing I've noticed through this time of the this growth and introspect and a lot of work on things, I have found that I'm not so apt to go in head first. But yet on the other side, if you don't, you're going to be more of a target and more of the guy that gets more frustrated. And so you're going to get irritated. You're going to get angry. And so in a way, I would think that's more on the person, or maybe they haven't learned how over time or been taught how to harness that, how to focus it. And there are, I watched this program on special forces, special operators, okay? And people in combat, that some of the operatives, some after a drill and after going through an actual real life situation, come back, their baseline readings, their stats, their blood pressure, their heart rates, all of this, their thinking was never affected. They came out like it was just another day. But yet you have some that are in complete disarray. They are completely taken back. They are completely in shock of the measures that have to be taken. So, and their stats are completely through the roof, and that yet some, even though their stats, their heart rates, their blood pressure is through the roof, but yet they're completely calm. It goes into that frame of mind. If you grew up in the environment, it's what you're accustomed to. You have all these physical symptoms going on, but mentally you are completely aware, but yet you're displaying some traits of the long-term effect. And those are what we have to look out for, is not the immediate, but what's the long-term on us? What has been the long-term outcome throughout our lives that has impacted us and caused us to have this one type of thinking? You know, a conversation we were having before we started this was neuroscience, okay? Of that, yeah, our environments do shape us. Our environments, as Zenon was saying, becomes the majority of how we think, becomes the way our brains are. And I would agree to that. But it doesn't mean that it can't be changed. Yes, the other we may be familiar to, and without hesitation, be able to go back to it, because it's what we know. It's in a way who we are, which I don't think is a lie, and I hope I'm correct in saying that. But it doesn't mean that that's who we have to be. We have a different way. I mean, it's like Buddhism, Taoism. Taoism and the different types of these aspects can help a person change that thinking. It doesn't mean our bodies aren't going to react in the same way. But once we rewired, oh geez, Elmer Fudd. But once we've rewired the brain, that thinking and that response won't be as apparent. But it may take more to get us there, but eventually we're going to revert back there. And that's where, if one stays in the environments, and when you go back, you can revert back to that. And I think, in a way, we have to be aware of that in order to reduce our exposure to it. And also be aware of, this is only how much I can tolerate of this now, because after that, I'm going to start acting in this way. And that people that have told you, you're this person, you're fighting like hell to not be that person inside. You're fighting like hell to go, I don't want to do this. Much like Logan, James Howlett, Wolverine, does when he's in a situation. And somebody has to go, Logan, don't. And inside, and you can, you know he's ready to pop his claws any moment, right? But he's working very hard not to. He's not wanting to. And I think it's good that when somebody is at that point of, I don't want to, I would rather take a different way to do this, is a very important thing. And that we have to remember that that we are humans and we can learn. And we can adapt and we can change. We can do things differently. And the environments we grew up in, yes, we may want to return to them because it's what we're familiar with. Okay. But it doesn't mean we always have to stay there. We don't want to stay there. It's where we want to be.
With the environment I grew up in, it was very beliefs is why we did things. It's why we made decisions. And the beliefs were the identity. And it was incredibly hard to walk away from that because that was the sense of self.
Yes.
And even in that, there were certain values that my parents had imparted to me that community was important. And so I kept trying to seek out community, and where they found community was within spiritual groups. And that still seemed to be a core thing that I was still in search for, despite finding that the environment that I was raised in those spiritual groups, or even with just family, was chaotic.
Yeah. Yeah, and I grew up in a very chaotic household also. One that was not very productive as far as the well-being goes. Okay. But I learned over time that take me out of the environment, I'm good.
It's like you step out of that environment and then you realize more of who you actually are outside of it.
Yes.
And you understand your values more and where you're actually standing. And then you realize, okay, what from this am I actually seeking? And can I incorporate this into being in a more healthy environment? But also there's this thing where you're leaning towards something that is more familiar.
Yes. Yeah. And that when one stays in what they call survival mode, survival instincts, okay? One will eventually, at some point, get tired of always staying there and look for...
Also getting outside of it.
Yes.
And realizing, okay, these are the different perspectives on what I was dealing with then. And this is the perspective that I can take on now and have a more healthier idea of what a positive environment would be, even with that being there.
Yeah. And yeah, the one thing, and let's look at this, on the other side of the coin here, okay? That when one has done work to stay away from that within themselves, and yet when they, for some reason, have to go back to it, though people that know that environment, that live and want that for some strange, odd, perverted reason, find a way to make it happen. Whether overtly, passively, manipulatively, or whatever, but will do something, say something that instinctively sets you back there. And so, in a way, and very much so, you are that person again, or return to that readily. Because when you go in, you're always in a defense. You are that person which you've worked to not be. And yet those other people that are that revert and stay there, draw that from you. They know where to get you. And then you've just proved them right. This person hasn't changed. This person is still that person. And to them, that justifies their belief. That validates it.
I think in this, there was something that you had said to me that I keep going back to the past kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But in that, I think I'm also just evaluating my perspective on it.
Yeah.
And asking more for a secondary opinion.
Okay.
Or perspective on the situation.
Right.
In a way, so I can step outside of it, look at it from a different perspective, and maybe have a new take on it to where I'm not being as affected by it.
Yeah. And so, and that staying on this other side, the dichotomy of it, that the word I'm starting to use more of, that I'm seeing the meaning of that.
Yeah.
I
think in evaluation of the past, to change our perspective on how we view it presently.
Yeah.
And what we're going through now.
Yeah.
The past has some sort of effect on how we're seeing certain things in the present.
Yes.
And so being able to address that and see that from a different perspective.
Yeah.
Is valuable, because then you're changing how you're looking at things, and you're not seeing it from this perspective of, oh, it was because of these beliefs that these people were doing that, and I don't agree with that, and I don't agree with their beliefs, and I'm against them and all that, when you could be going, well, here's this other perspective on those beliefs.
Yeah.
This other perspective on what they were doing. And maybe we can more understand where they're coming from, but also understand how we can grow as a person from analyzing that.
Yeah. And we have to remember too, there are people that without that chaos and that stuff that hasn't been examined truly, that are always finding a way to avoid it and always look at other people as, well, they did it, and so I'll do it, or see
that sounds like coming for excuses for doing something, and yet by an example given, but not really having a true justifiable reason for it.
Right. And if you're doing it just because that's where you are with yourself, because of something else underlying that you haven't truly dealt with, that's going to be your go-to just to prove you're right, to make you seem valid.
If you're doing things just to validate yourself and you have no other reason for doing things, why are you actually doing them?
It's because that they haven't, these people haven't come to that point. That everything you're doing, you've been told, is causing problems. You're making everybody mad at you. And they keep denying it and keep claiming to be a victim. Well, I don't understand why they did this.
You're sitting in it. You're causing your own suffering by being attached to it.
Exactly. And that they just want to feel comfortable and feel victimized by it. And that, like, for example, I'm going to use a situation that happened recently that I went to go this weekend to finish up some things, to get some things from an estate that, you know, my part of my family's estate, that's, or not an estate, some things to pick up. And that there's a family member that keeps holding on to how I used to be. And that I have had to, in a way, or many times, say, the reason you're upset is because I tell you something you don't like hearing, or I'm not accepting it. And I'm going to tell you I don't tolerate it. But yet this person persists. And you finally tell somebody that is very close in proximity of the person, hey, I don't want to, but if people keep pushing, I will show you. That, yes, I was that person. And that's the person I've worked very hard to not be again and be anymore. Well, invariably, something happened and I got very disappointed and I was upset about it. I was actually mad about it and I wanted to leave. But yet, a person came out and said something to me that you are being the person you have worked very hard to not be. And then you are going, okay, then here we are. Then I've and I've worked very hard to avoid going to a point to not be that person, but to stand my ground and go, I'm not going to allow this. You can't talk to me this way. I'm not going to permit it. And when you set the boundary, that just irritates them more. And so they just persist at it. And so you want to leave and you do everything you can and you pack up and you leave. Well, the person that you had told this to was there. If you keep pushing, I will be that person. And nobody's going to like it. Well, it ended up that something got said and a threat got made. And I go, don't threaten me. And then, bang, I said, you know, you're acting just like this person. Something I had been avoiding saying for a very long time. Just because I knew that I would stoop to that level. That thereafter, stoop to where you've avoided being. Because these were examples that were shown in front, that were shown to you as you were growing up. And so the resolve while driving back home, driving back here to where I live, you ask and you're thinking about this through the drive back going, I don't know when the next time I'm going to go back if I am. Because this brings that part of you, that person that you've worked very hard to not be. It brings that out. No matter what you do. You set limits. You try to avoid it. But invariably, the conversation or something happens that gets drawn to that, or somebody out of the blue goes, ah, and you're in a defensive again. And you're back into that survival mode. And so your recourse is something you work and you don't like, and you're going, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. And yet, it still ends up proving that other person right. And you know, deep inside, you're going, you know what? You messed up. You let it happen. But this time, you chose. And you chose to be ugly. You chose to show them, this is who I was. And so you get called names from it. You get called, you're not a human. Am I proud of it? No. But when it comes to a point of, I think that there does come a point of like, okay, I am going to prove you right, but I'm going to do it. And you're not going to like what happens. I don't like what happens. So this is where I think in many ways, those environments that are bad for us, that draw out, even though one has done everything and it still continues to do the work to not, and intensively, it can still happen. No one's perfect. And this is where I say, sometimes you have to. You have to show what you were. You have to show what you don't want to be and what people didn't want you to be and what you didn't want to be. To show the contrast. Is it productive? No. Is it favorable? No, because it just dismantles everything you've said in that one moment. But yet, when you look at it and you go, you have done what you can. And then the day after, or you look back going, you know what? I don't have any remorse in what happened. I don't have any guilt over it. And where it could have been, just let the person be angry. Leave them alone. Let them be angry. As long as they're not taking it out on anybody and they're just experiencing that emotion, let them experience it. Let them go through it. Don't interrupt it. They'll be okay after, but let them calm down. Let them process it out. Let them come to rest with it. Let them reconcile with it. That there are people, and there are those moments where no one's given that chance to. They know when, from experience, they know when that I'm still going to push my position on it. And that person isn't ready to rationally talk about it. But yet the person that keeps pushing the position has yet to actually process their own, where yet they revert back to because of the experiences we've had, the interaction they've had with each other. But on the other, there's a caveat in this stuff. The person that kept the peace, that said no, is gone. So chaos reigns. And so, here it is. It's like, as we were talking about, like the Lord of the Rings, right? Where the kingdom and the realms fell into complete chaos, right?
Yeah.
Okay. In a way, it's that same scenario. In a way. But yet, you have Gandalf, who's trying to keep the peace of everything, trying to solve everything and keep things in a balance, right? But you have the other guy who's looking to stir up the Eye of Sauron to rain darkness. But yet, Gandalf at points appeared to lose. He appeared to be no more. But yet, comes back and becomes more powerful. But I think in that understood, sometimes you have to wield that absolute power and gather the resources to do it. Now, is it justified to wield that absolute power and that moment and that person without regret?
Was it justified when Frodo was?
You know,
he did it to get out of a few situations.
Yes, exactly.
And then he started to use it more and more. he started to mess around with it, play around with it like a party trick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I think it depends on how we're using said power.
Yes.
Because if we're doing it for the greater good of a situation and we have our morals and values and ethics in mind.
Yeah.
And what's going to be greater good for the situation and what we're actually trying to accomplish here.
Yeah.
Then it's going to have better benefit than just using it for mere party tricks or using it with malice.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that if one is doing it for malice, then that's the wrong reason. That's not they justified. Have
lost themselves in the process.
Exactly. And I think when we find ourselves and go,
they become like Gollum, where they're like, all I want is power. And it shall corrupt, and it shall be mine.
Like yeah, that. you become obsessed with it. Yeah. And that knowing when you're doing it in the right way, you are aware that you're pulling in as Frodo did, that he knew that whenever he did, it was calling the race. Okay.
So he realized at a certain point that I should not be using this ring as much. It is affecting me. It is drawing attention to me.
Yes.
It is creating problems when I do.
Yeah.
But he still ended up being somewhat corrupted by it.
Right.
He still ended up not wanting to let it go. And it was his friend, Sam Gamgee.
Yes.
That was like, no, no, no. We got to throw this into the volcano and get rid of it.
We have to get rid of it.
We have to fulfill our mission in what we set out in the first place.
Yeah.
Abide by our morals and principles and values. And we need to make sure that this gets tossed into the volcano because that's what we set out to do in the first place.
Exactly.
And that was the reason for using it in the first place. The reason why it should have been used.
And when somebody does use it, and when they go to using the ring and it's drawing that darkness, and they're left to the point of, I do this, I know that I am pulling this death of myself. Yes. But yet, I'm at a point now of I have no choice. And yes, I might sound like I'm justifying something here. And I hopefully not. I'm not. I guess my point here is don't willingly go there.
There was times that it was used for the greater good of the situation, yes. But it was understood that using this ring had consequences.
Yes.
To the self, to morality, to ethics, to personal safety and concealment in trying to destroy the ring.
Right, yeah. And this brings us back. You know, this brings us to the point of what I was talking about, you know, great Jediism, is that the gray part, get off the gray, is that he knew how much power he could wield, how much damage he could do, but he did it only when absolutely necessary.
There was one person who was not affected by the ring and would not take it from the series. Yeah. And that was that elf woman who.
Yes.
When she saw the ring, she saw, oh, look how great you could be. Look at all the good you could do from it.
Yes.
Realized.
Yes.
My own strength is enough to get me there. I don't need this ultimate power.
Yes.
To do that. And so she outright denied Frodo, and she's like, no, I'm powerful as I am. I'm good with who I am. That ring yes. will corrupt me.
Yes. And this is where the balance of when we have to make a judgment call. But yet, when we do it, we must never forget who we really are. We cannot lose ourselves, as you were saying. And I think when something is done and there isn't remorse from it, it was the correct step to make the point to say, yes, I will at times go and display things, but also this is what's bringing me to this point. And when one crosses that threshold, that they're like, I no longer can stop. I no longer can hold back here. Then you do it. And there's no remorse the next day or afterwards. But the disappointment of that you have to say goodbye or possibly distance yourself a lot further. Then the reconciliation of having to distance yourself because of what draws that part of you back out. So in a way, I would think in that you are going, I don't want to be that person unless I absolutely have to. I absolutely necessarily have to. And to some people that may sound like you're just looking for a justification. Okay. But on the other side, when one goes, I don't know when or if I'll be back. I think in a way that saying that, yes, that part of us, that thought process, that stuff we know is still going to be there. And we really hope we never have to go back to it. And because we don't want to. We want to do what we can to improve ourselves, to get a better grasp on it. And to still examine what takes us there. And sometimes, even if mild forms of it come up and we can handle and manage ourselves through it, which we can manage. But yet there's always going to be that one button that, as hard as one tries and works at to not do, it's always going to be there. It's always going to be exposed. And we try to guard it, and our ego, and that fragile part of our ego that it's a part of, takes a play. It shows its cards. And by all means, I'm not saying it's right. In no sense of the word is it right. But I think at times, as Another gray explained to me, said there are sometimes where it's justified. It's valid. And I would agree with that. And I would agree that, yes, foremost, always take the other route. Avoid the conflict. Avoid those things that don't take us to that point. We would much rather have a good time, much rather be at peace, all of us. And do what and do the other stuff that's contemplative, that examines it, that lets us delve into it. And yes, we are human. Yes, there's going to be parts of us that are never going to be completely arrested. Never. And that, especially when we're talking about changing our thinking, changing these neural pathways. Which is a big challenge. It's a long, hard challenge. And it's...
It gets us out of our comfort zone. But it is
worth it. Yeah. Yeah.
Seeing things from an outside perspective. Learning to grow as a person. Learning to find who you are outside of the environment that you were raised in.
Yes.
Are important things to address.
Right. And believe me, anybody who's grown up in an environment that was unhealthy, were in a way highly disrespectful and intrusive, one comes to a point of that you want no part of it. You want to go, I just want this to stop. I'm too tired. I can't keep doing this. And you can, and then you go, once you've had a taste of that peace, you want to maintain it. You want to stay there with it. And that but yet, what does it take to defend it? What does it take to maintain it? And that's where we go, is this going to be to maintain my peace and the peace and balance? Or is it going to disrupt it and throw things into a chaos and the consequences that follow? Well, one must be okay either way. One must be okay with the consequences that follow. And the other may be, I really would prefer the lesser. Well, if you prefer the lesser, then great. And that's what we all want. We all hopefully can be there. And yet, there's still going to be that part of us that in a way is drawn to it. Frodo in the Ring. Frodo, the little
Frodo. Frog,
Frodo, the oh, guy that did...
the guy who was supposed to take the ring, or the guy who turned into
the guy. Gollum, that's the guy, Gollum, you know. But I think in a way we all have Frodo and we all have Gollum in us. All have it. But which one do we use? Now, we saw that Frodo had good in him. He wanted it. And you could see an internal battle. But yet, it was all so he could still get that ring. And so, in that, you go, what is your motive for it? Are you truly trying to seek peace and balance? Or are you doing it as a motive, as a portrayal of a facade? And, but yet, I think this also looks at what are we comfortable with in our choices and the decisions. And, but I think ultimately, the best option in any situation is if we have to be in that environment, we limit and we find the fastest exit possible for when it's needed. So we don't go to that point of that disrupts our well-being, disrupts what we've worked to have a positive outcome with, to be that person that's different, right? And that I think and know for a fact that when we can maintain ourselves completely in that environment that takes away, that puts that bad, brings that part of ourselves out, and we can still maintain and be at peace over it and never and not be disturbed. I think we have in a very much so mastered who we are. And of course, we are our own slave and our own master, which that is something to contemplate, something to really, which one are we? Which one are we? Are we the slave or are we the master of ourselves? Which one are we? At what time are we either or both? Can we be either or both? And can we be that at the same time? That is a very deep question, I think. And I think it's worthy to contemplate that. I think it's worthy to examine it. And I think in a way we are both already. It's just, which one do we choose to be? It's like, are we the wolf or not? So, conversations like this are,
they're nice.
They are. And yet, I think in ways, are very hard to have at times. Because it does remind us of that moment. But on the other side of it, if one is able to talk about it and realize, you know, you did what you could, and it was at that point, you go, okay, I must. Yeah, I must distance myself. Because none of this is going to be good for me. And, but knowing on the other side of it, the contrast that we know we're capable. It's like we were talking about earlier, about those that who take self-defense classes, martial arts, all that, they practice to do it, okay? To where it becomes second nature. But not everybody that does can. And I would like that to be understood, that even though one has practiced it, not everybody that does can actually do it when the time comes. You know, you might know this kick, you might know that, you might know this strike, you know the damage can issue, but yet your goal and you go, I can't. I don't have it in me. Well, it's great exercise. It teaches great discipline. It teaches a different philosophy. It does know that I can fight per se, or at least I know the moves and how to fight. Okay, but that's only part of it. That's the physical part of it. The mental part is committing to it. I know in my own experience, push come to shove, I can't, I will. Because I was like a couple of years back, 2 years back, just about 2 years back, I was at a table and there was some drinking going on. And this guy reaches up out of the blue that I hadn't seen in years, reaches up and slaps me upside the head a couple of times. I'm like, what the hell is this? Right? So I go, you know what? No. I reach up, I move around, and I put the guy in a chokehold. And go, are we cool? Can I let go? Now, how many people can actually move around and without thinking and second nature do that? You have laid your hands on somebody when you could have just distanced and left. One school of thought is, you know, you could have said goodbye and left. And the other school of is that, you know, the guy hits you first. Finish it. Well, from my experience is if somebody lays your hands on you, you finish it. You go ahead and you engage. And you don't hesitate. Because if the person wants to do it, they're going to do it again. So you give them an option while they're in your grasp. Are we done here? Because I will continue this. And you will be on the floor being revived. And I won't have regrets doing it. Because you asked. But the other part would go, the other side of school of thought is that you could have avoided that whole situation by walking away. Well, after that, the person still wanted to persist to engage again. Well, you realize that in that, the person wants to escalate it. But you've regained your composure. You've regained where you were before, but yet you're going, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I would much rather have a friendship than for this to do this, for us to do this. This isn't the way I want to do this. And there's all other ways I could go with this, all other things with it. But this is where, if something like that happens, you have injured that person's ego. You have shown them you will not stand for it. But that's what that person understands. And yet once you've got the upper hand on them, and if you maintain that by not responding, you have still maintained control by not responding again, because you've already shown you have control. You have more. It's been understood. That is part of what, you know, in martial arts could also teach you by not responding again. That is control. That is control over the situation. But they already know what you're capable of, what you're willing to do. But again, that's where that other part of us does come out, does emerge. But yet, to not, 90% of the time, is in itself still a great feat. That is still accomplishment. That's still something to be feel good about, to think good of ourselves on. But I know that the community looks at Grey Jedi as just justification of being able to do something just because of a title and a name, right? Well, Grey Jediism is not an excuse to do something. It's a higher standard. It shows one is willing to gain more control, to have a higher form of discipline with themselves, in order and have a greater understanding of themselves, an intensive understanding of themselves, to knowing yourself deeper, to knowing yourself thoroughly. And there is great contemplation in it. That cerebral mental thought, which is alone great medicine. It teaches us many things about ourselves. And we have to, and we can gain a better understanding of ourselves in through that thought, through that meditative process, through that search, through that work, through that practice. But we cannot forget ourselves as a whole either. It's something that if we forget ourselves, both sides, the way we are, who we are, and knowing that we can still fall short, I think is acceptance of who we are, who the person is. But our morals, our beliefs, our ethics, and experience, I think we maintain those and understand the value of them and the importance of that will far outweigh the lesser part of ourselves, the darker part of ourselves. And I think in that we will also understand the darker part of ourselves as well, that there can still be a moral code with it. That darker part of ourselves still can and does have compassion. And like Logan, even though he would be in a feral state, he still had a form of compassion. There was things he would not do. He would never harm children, and he would never harm women. But if absolutely had to, the last resort, last call, he would. And I think that in a way is where his morality he wrestled with in a part deep down. And so I think in a way we all have Gandalf in us. Gandalf the light, Gandalf the gray, his friend, the guy that was calling the Eye of Sauron and the darkness, who led the army of the goblin army, whomever.
Orcs,
yeah, the orc people. I think we all have that also. And I think Gandalf understood that within all of us, within himself, everything around. But as he said in that great moment, thou shalt not pass. I think maybe we might say that to ourselves. Thou shalt not pass this point. And I will do what I can and must to not allow it, which means maybe taking the steps necessary to not ever let it. But then that becomes the caveat. We do what we must. So I think that therein lies the contemplation. I think therein lies the truth within ourselves, or at least one truth. But however, is it right for us to ignore that? Like, and in the practice of, we do not touch the darkness.
Why are we afraid of ourselves?
It's a very good question. That is a very good question. Why are we afraid of ourselves? We don't trust ourselves. I think if one understands that they can, they do trust themselves. They trust that they know when to stop, how far to go, what to do, when to make that call, and how to make the call. But if one doesn't trust themselves and they have doubt, they shouldn't. And if they shouldn't, never step foot. So I think with this, there are those that can, those that will, those that know, and there are those who can study it, can understand the aspects of it, but never truly be. Who never can. But yet they understand the philosophies behind it, the meanings of it, and the practice of it. And that's why I think it's good in the study of the philosophies of this. We look at all aspects, okay? We look at the dark, we look at the light, we look at everything else in between. That way, we have a better insight. We have a better understanding.
Having a realistic perspective versus an ideal of what things should be.
Yeah. An ideology. Yep. I'll say, in a way, that one who has grown up in an environment that does bring that bad stuff out, I think, in a way, would seek out and understand more of peace than anybody else, because they're always fighting against the unrest within themselves. They're always in a place with themselves to where, I don't want to, I don't like this, I don't like this person. Well, why don't be then? You can't ignore and erase that part of yourself. Now, yes, one can, as I've said, master themselves to not, which in a way, one has truly mastered themselves not. But also in that, with that, I believe that a master of themselves would also know, I must. I've done everything possible to not. And that I think also that is where one has reconciled with themselves. These are both parts of me. And that not at, there are times that one part of us has to come out a bit, has to come out. Because if not, you're still doing what you're fighting to not be and not do. To deny is also to have the dark side, to also be a part of it. And that causes one to suffer. But to also be is acknowledgement, which is, I think, in a way, I hope I'm not wrong in this statement, also practicing compassion. I hope I'm not wrong in that. But this is a lifelong journey. This is always work to progress, to become better than we were, who we may imagine ourselves to be. I think so. I think knowing who we are understands both our natures and what our nature is. And they both have a place. So I think here is a good place to stop. Because I'm getting hungry. I haven't eaten today. And my stomach is beginning to become my master. So anyway, guys, again, for whatever reason, some strange reason, we actually acted on, let's have another podcast just because.
It'll make up for not doing a podcast next week.
Yes. I would like everybody to know that I am going to be moving. I have found a place and I'm very pleased with it. It's an old home that was built in 1941. Still very solid. It's got some rough spots, but for the most part, yes. It's a cottage, per se, one bedroom, but it was built in 1941 when things were built solid and real. It's not glamorous, but yet it's very homey. So hopefully by the next time we do this, I will be from my new place. So Julie, Xenon, the quiet one, and I'm Tal Griffin. I didn't leave a thought with you last podcast earlier today. Something I want to think about, something I'd like to put out. Acknowledge who you are. Not in a falsehood, not in what one would lead you to believe you are, but what who you are. Not who you want to portray people to see. Be genuine to yourself. Be genuine to those around you. Don't justify. Just be. Because we are both. We are one. We are the yin and the yang, the light and the dark, the balance.
The yin and yang represents the dichotomy of form and no form in Zen.
Yes.
Which in essence is what is described as the different aspects of the Tao.
Yeah.
Or what in Jediism is commonly referred to as the Force.
Yes, very much so. It's ever changing, ever flowing. And there's each of us in every part. There's each of us in both sides, the light and the dark. And we have to reconcile with that. We have to agree to recognize that, agree to be that. So thank you, both of you, the quiet rabbit woman over there, Xenon, who is always ever present, but always observing.
Always.
Always. Hey, she speaks. Oh, my God.
She's broken her vow of silence.
She's broken her vows of silence. Oh, my God. Anyway, I would like for everybody to think about that and the ever-flowing nature of how we are the Force, the ever-changing, the message that is carried to us. So anyway. Tal Griffin out. Everybody take care. Have a good week. Until next time, take care.